Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Sarah Kendzior, a best-selling author and previous co-host of Gaslit Nation, a podcast covering corruption in the US. Her memoir, The Last American Road Trip, is the story of her family's journey to the most beautiful, fascinating, and bizarre places in the US during one of its most tumultuous eras. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. And I love how your book combines so many things. You've got politics, you've got what's happening in the world, you've got family adventures and memories and American history. It's all in there.
Oh, yeah. I think it's all interconnected, so it should be.
Yeah. So where did the inspiration for the book and the trips come from?
Well, you know, I'm a mother of two, and in 2016, I became worried that America was going to change in a way for the worse, and in a kind of permanent way due to political corruption and also climate change. So I became determined to take my children and to show them as much of the country as I could before this happened. So between 2016 and 2024, we drove all over the place to see national parks, historic sites, you know, crime scenes, just anything that kind of reflected the reality of the country, good or bad. And so the book takes place between, you know, those 8 years as the country changed dramatically and as my children grew up.
Oh, amazing. I bet you've got some incredible memories and photographs of it all.
Oh, yes.
So where did you start then? Whereabouts do you live, first of all? Where did you go from your home?
Well, I live in Missouri. I live in St. Louis. So I'm right in the center of the country, which is an important thing for a road trip book, because it meant that wherever we went, we would drive in every direction. So this is a book that explores a lot of places in America that are usually not visited, that are underrepresented, and that we would pass along the way. And so we could see the landscape change before our eyes in every direction. And I mean, you know, physically, environmentally, politically. One thing I appreciated about doing this is that it debunked stereotypes and generalizations about different regions in advance, before my children could form them. You could see the diversity of our country. You could see things for what they really are. You could witness, you know, major changes that were happening during this era, you know, COVID probably being the most transformative in terms of how people lived their lives, and see it firsthand and not have to rely on the opinions of pundits or politicians or other people who frame things in a very simplistic and divisive way.
Yeah. And was it difficult traveling around during COVID? Because there were lots of restrictions, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we didn't travel very far during COVID. You know, one of the places I took them to was in Missouri. It's a town called Florida. So I kind of tricked them and said, hey, guys, we're going to Florida. They were a bit disappointed by this. I took them to Florida, Missouri, population zero. But it's the hometown of Mark Twain. It's where he was born. And I went there in part because I knew, you know, with a population of zero, that there was no one we could catch COVID from, but also to kind of show them that history, because he is such a seminal American figure. And if you live in Missouri, if you live near the Mississippi River, you know, you're constantly encountering his presence. I think there's a lot to learn from his life, from his recollections of the Civil War, both in fiction and nonfiction, his frustration with corruption and a feeling of constantly being on the verge of losing the country he loves. And so I wanted to show my children that. But I also, you know, it's a place, Florida, Missouri is a place where you can see the Milky Way. It's so deserted that all the stars shine bright. And so I wanted them to be able to see wonders like that at such a tragic time, you know, at a time of so much death and loss.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. And tell us about, I know you've sort of explored as much as possible Route 66. I mean, obviously that spans a massive, massive area of the country. How much did you see and how did you navigate it?
Over time, we saw all of it, you know, goes from Chicago to California. We didn't see all of it at once. There's a little edge at the end. There's a little bit in California that I always thought, oh, someday, you know, we'll save that for later. We'll save that, for, you know, so we have a treat. And I think a lot of it burnt down in the fires this year. It sort of goes to my point that, you know, there's an urgency in this book to capture everything. Yeah, Route 66 is really representative of America. It'll turn 100 next year. At the time, it was this road of escape, this road of romance, but it was romanticized in a way that no one alive can really remember it in its prime. You know, there's this mythology about it. And then when you drive it, it's broken into detours, it's turned into frontage roads. A lot of places in it are broken down and abandoned. And so it does stand in for what has happened to America in my lifetime. Notably, it was decommissioned by Ronald Reagan, the president who, you know, set the scene for the new American reality and broke a lot of the institutional protections that had existed before I was born. And you kind of see that on Route 66. But again, you know, you also see a lot of beauty. You also see a lot of creativity, a lot of strange monuments and shrines hand-built by average Americans just put on the roadside. And so it's a very interesting place to kind of explore this country from the bottom up.
Yeah, I bet. And what about national parks? There's obviously loads over America. Which ones did you go and visit?
Oh, we went to as many as we could. I think we went to over 24. You know, some of them are famous, like Yellowstone and Glacier. Some like Hot Springs or in Arkansas or Theodore Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota are lesser known. I'm very glad that we saw them and we did. We saw quite a lot before COVID. And we also saw them, you know, Trump had threatened from the start of his first presidency back in 2017 to defund and get rid of the national parks. But it's in this term right now that he's actually making a more rigorous effort to do that. And that absolutely breaks my heart because our parks are beautiful. They're something that all Americans appreciate. It doesn't matter your political perspective, their ecological importance, their importance to indigenous communities cannot be overstated. And so this book, I hope it's not just a memory of beautiful things that were. I hope it's something that inspires people to protect them, but I also hope that my children will grow up and be able to revisit a lot of these places and see the efforts that Americans put in to protecting them for generations to come.
Oh, definitely. And are your kids particularly, particularly interested in history? I always thought as a child, it makes such a difference when you're visiting places as opposed to sitting in a classroom and learning about them from copying dates down on a blackboard.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it made it much more vivid for them. And when we set off, they were like 9 and 6, and now they're 17 and 14. And so a lot has changed. And, you know, there were things they didn't understand about the places we saw when they were very young, but they still remember that experience. And when they hear of places or they hear bad things about certain regions, you know, they are, as I said before, able to debunk those stereotypes. But I think it made history just a natural part of their life. You know, it's not a school assignment. It's not something that's strange to do, to go find a historical site, see a museum, see a beautiful park. It's just a regular kind of mode of behavior for our family. And it didn't make them more curious. It made them more likely to read and to try to delve into the history of things. But yeah, there's certain places you just have to see them to really understand them. There's no way around it. And I think in the era of the internet, when there's AI, when there are so many fake images, I'm very glad that they were able to see the real thing and have that ability to discern between something that's fabricated and something that's real.
Oh, for sure. And also to explore what's on your doorstep, you know, your home country. It's very easy when you start traveling, or whether it's family holidays or not, you know, the idea of going abroad is really fun and exciting. And, you know, for Americans wanting to explore Europe, for Europeans, the idea of going to America and Asia and things like that are really exciting. But to just explore what's in your home country is really important. And so many people don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, Americans also don't explore abroad, in part because it's, you know, it's expensive and it's difficult, but our country is so huge. You know, I think of the number of trips that we've taken as a family. You know, we're a family with not very much money, which is one of the reasons we drove everywhere instead of flying. And we have seen a lot. You know, I've seen 48 out of the 50 states with just Alaska and Hawaii to go. And most can't, just because it's a massive undertaking. There's just so much to see. There are so many treasures. There are so many remarkable remarkable places that a lot of folks haven't heard of. And, you know, that's why I'm very committed, you know, to keeping this country together when there are oligarchs and plutocrats and others who really, they literally want to tear it apart. They talk about things like secession or dividing us or partitioning us. I think in order to mine us, mine our land for resources and things like that, I think it's very important that we stay together. And, you know, my goal is to still see everything. I've seen a lot, but there's always more. You know, that's the beautiful thing about living in such a, you know, enormous and fascinating place, is that there's always more. There are always secrets. There are always things to discover.
Yeah. And one of the parts of the book, you talk about doing a canoe trip in, I think that was in St. Louis as well. And you talk about doing with the family, and then you did it on your own after the Roe versus Wade was established. And tell us about that, because it's quite a moving story.
Oh, thank you. Yes. You know, my husband and I had taken a canoe trip on the Mississippi River, you know, very Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn style. And then a couple of weeks later, this is in 2022, Roe versus Wade was overturned. And my state, Missouri, was the first state that automatically took away our bodily autonomy, our right to bodily autonomy, because of that Supreme Court ruling. We had what they call a trigger law, which means it's automatically enforced. And that hit me much harder than I anticipated it would. You know, I felt that my bodily autonomy, my personhood was under assault in a very violating way. And so I ended up, you know, going out with a kayak, going out onto the water just to get out my frustrations. And I saw, you know, other women there, you know, with tears in their eyes, feeling the same way. And the thing, you know, that's crucial here is that, again, you know, a lot of people refer to our country in terms of red or blue or Republican and Democrat. There were a lot of women who might vote conservative, you know, who were very upset about this ruling because they saw it as an attack on their independence, on their right to make choices. Like, it wasn't as much about the act of abortion itself. And so to be in that situation is strange, but it also harkened back to the era of states' rights, of the era of slavery, where which state you lived in did determine how much of a person you are. And so the next day I crossed that river again, back into Illinois, which historically was a free state when Missouri was a slave state, to just see if I felt any different, because now my rights had been returned to me. It was a strange experience. You know, it's a confusing thing to have what usually are just sort of stereotypes about what it's like to live in a particular place become real, become codified legally. It's a frightening thing to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing you look at in the book, there's quite a few world's largest in America, various sites and things. What world's largest things did you see?
Oh, gosh, like everything. If you can name an object, you know, the U.S. has the world's largest version of it. The Midwest and South in particular, and Route 66 really, really love to have, you know, the world's largest fork, the world's largest pencil, the world's largest box, the world's largest ball of twine. I mean, the sillier and more useless the object, the bigger it has to be. And, you know, there's this sort of natural quality, I think, to American life where we just like things very, very big. You know, and unfortunately, our president is good at tapping into this kind of, you know, elaborate spectacle. But, you know, there's something about just a really big thing that does draw me in. It makes me feel like a little kid. And when I'm with two little kids who are also, you know, very excited to see a giant ball of twine, you know, you kind of revert to childhood wonder. So it's just fun. You know, I'm a total sucker for it. I go right into the tourist traps. I'm their mark. And, you know, I think now everybody knows it.
Yeah. And it's quite clever how I think with the book, there's a lot of positivity in it, you know, a lot of caring and nostalgia towards America, towards your country, while at the same time, there's some negativity, obviously, being a bit critical and obviously concerned about your future. Did you want to have that balance? Was that important to you?
Yeah, I just wanted to write a book that was honest and true. And that is what's true. There are a lot of beautiful and wondrous things in America, past and present. And there are also a lot of crimes and corruption and brutality and tragedy. And they often overlap, which is one of the most jarring things about living here. You know, it's like having an unrequited love. That's how I often feel living in America, that I love this country very much, and it does not love me back, and it does not love other people back in the sense of institutions or government. But when I go out and I see people and I eat different regional foods and hear different music and see different landscapes, and, you know, we have everything. We have mountains and deserts and plains and forests. And, you know, oceans. And I mean, it just goes on and on. The sheer diversity of it all, you know, you really fall in love, and you want those good qualities to stay. And so, yeah, there's some heartbreak in that, especially when you're a mother and you want your children to experience this version of America firsthand and not just have it be something they read about in a book, the way, say, I read about, you know, buffalo, which, you know, nearly went extinct in America after being a dominant animal. You know, and now they're a rarity. I don't want these things that we treasure to become rare or endangered. You know, I want them to be protected. And so part of my goal, I guess, with the book was that.
Yeah. And you mentioned the fires earlier. One of the things that comes into the book is the issue of climate change and obviously the devastation of things like the wildfires and the extreme floods that you've had in the US. Did you encounter much of that through your travels?
Oh, we were always out running fire. You know, it was unnerving after a while. Every time we went west, you know, we would discover that just a couple of days after we departed from our destination, like in Colorado or in Utah, you know, a fire had burned down the place where we'd had this glorious view of a forest. And we live in Missouri. I mean, my city just got hit by the worst tornado it's had since 1959. So we've witnessed devastation. We know it can come on suddenly. But with climate change, it's different because there's a bit of inevitability to it. You know, you could try to mitigate the damage and try to, you know, do things that are positive to protect it. But we know, you know, the temperature is rising and that things like the Colorado River drying up, it's really awful to behold. So, you know, I hoped that my children would become conservationists out of this, you know, would have kind of a natural reverence, you know, for the environment. And they absolutely do. You know, that just came from seeing it. You know, if you see beautiful places, of course you want to preserve them. And I think more Americans, if they get out of their cities, I'm thinking of like politicians and prominent writers and stuff like that, and they see how beautiful you know, rural America is and not just the parks, I think maybe there'd be more of an effort to preserve it when you see it up close instead of through images on a screen.
I was going to ask you actually what your kids' interests are, if you don't mind me asking, whether they've become particularly interested in history or the environment or travel or whatever.
Oh, they're very interested in travel. They very badly actually want to get out of the U.S. and see what else is out there because we've never managed to do that. And now, of course, it's becoming harder. But hopefully there'll be a, you know, a less European road trip sequel. But yeah, they love history. My daughter loves music. You know, she's a violinist. You know, my son is still in high school, kind of, you know, just exploring everything. I'm just glad that they stayed curious. I'm glad they're not easily satisfied with easy answers. You know, they tend to ask a lot of questions and delve pretty deep. And so that's all I really, you know, want out of them is, you know, imagination and an open mind and an open heart. And, you know, they're good kids. I'm proud of them.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, if people want to get a copy of your book, your memoir, The Last American Road Trip, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Sarah Kenzior, who we've been chatting with today. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.